We are, as I mentioned, working through the book of wisdom. And I mentioned last week that we were to set up a wall of wisdom. And maybe you saw that downstairs. And it's blank at the moment. So what I'm doing is I didn't leave any cards down there yet because I wanted to explain the process. These are the cards that I'm going to ask you to fill out over the next few weeks. And what I'd like you to do is to write on there a proverb that is useful to you and that you think may be useful to other people. But let me give you some parameters first, because I don't want to know on the wisdom cards, on our wall of wisdom, the secret to making the best apple pie. All right? We can create another wall of recipes if you like, okay? I'm not opposed to that. But on the wall of wisdom at Lawson Road, we want to start with virtues, okay? Things that point us towards God. And so your first line, it says, I have learned about. And then you fill that in, okay? So it may be money. It may be that you've learned about truth. It may be that you've learned about honesty, or you get the idea, right? Hard work. Patience. And so you write down what your proverb is about. And once you've done that, it doesn't really matter where your proverb comes from. Because we're not asking you just to choose out of the book of Proverbs or the book of Ecclesiastes. This is wisdom that we have collected. And just like the sages who edited and collated the book of Proverbs pulled their wisdom from many different places, then we can do the same. So if you have a favorite saying of Confucius that you think is wise, and many of them are, then feel free to put it on a card and put it on the wall. Okay, if that helps to explain the value of patience. Okay? Because that may help someone else pass it on. That's the whole purpose of Proverbs, is passing on wisdom. It's not just saying, look how much I know, look how wise I am. It's about helping other people grasp these truths. And so it could be from a meme on the internet. You might just want to do a search and sit down with your friend Google and talk about it and say, tell me, oh Google, about patience. You know, and you'll get, if you do an image search like that, you'll get all sorts of little sayings and everything that pop up. It may be something that was passed down through your family. Okay, whatever it is, you can fill it out today. You can write it down during the week. Take your card home. And I have put around the wall, you'll see a whole list of virtues, fruits of the Spirit, and others from the book of Proverbs. And you may like to use those as an idea. I'm going to think about this particular virtue, see what you can come up with. I'd like you to write on it, and I'm going to put some up here on the stool. There's some downstairs near the wall. There's some in the foyer out there. And but just put them in the basket, okay? Because what we'll do once we get them is we'll arrange them in their groups, so you don't have to search for faithfulness. You know, we'll put faithfulness together in a group and that sort of thing. So if you'll just put them in the basket, and then we'll attach them to the wall during the week. So I appreciate you cooperating with that, participating in that. Remember, it doesn't have to be true. It's a proverb. It doesn't have to be true in absolutely every circumstance. That's the nature of Proverbs. It just needs to be a healthy rule of thumb. Because the big part where the wisdom is required, what separates wisdom from knowledge, is knowing which proverb to use, the right proverb to use at the right time. Okay? And so it doesn't have to be something you can look at and go, oh, well, that sounds good, but it doesn't apply to here. If it applies in general, then that's good enough. All right. I want to do something a little bit different. I have one more song, that we're going to sing. We're just going to sing this through twice, but then it'll sort of dovetail with the sermon this morning.
Lord, you are more precious than silver. Lord, you are more costly than gold. Lord, you are more beautiful than diamonds, and nothing I desire compares with you. Lord, you are more precious than silver. Lord, you are more costly than gold. Lord, you are more beautiful than diamonds, and nothing I desire compares with you.
Interestingly, those words are taken from the book of Proverbs, only they're not about the Lord. They're about wisdom. Isn't that interesting how we switch that? It would seem strange, would it not, to sing about wisdom you are? But that's what Scripture has written. Chapter 3, verses 13 to 15. Blessed are those who find wisdom, those who gain understanding, for she is more profitable than silver and yields better returns than gold. She is more precious than rubies. Nothing you desire can compare with her. In our growth group recently, we finished up by saying, posing this question, that if I was to offer you a book of wise sayings, okay, if we were to take the Lawson Road Wall of Wisdom and if we were to put them in a book and collate them, and you had the choice between this book of wisdom and a bag of rubies, what would you take? And we know the right answer in a church on a Sunday morning is wisdom. We also know that most of us would take rubies and then would excuse ourselves by going out and buying a book of wisdom somewhere, right? We know that we really value money over wisdom. We know that. Certain things in life prompt us to consider what's truly valuable in our lives. Marriage. Children. And it's not, 15 years of marriage. It's the time that you're married. The moment you're married. And you sit down and you think about your future and your dreams. It's not when your child is 14. It's when that child is born and you look forward to the future and you make the plans and life hasn't become mundane yet. It's the work. Sometimes work helps us make decisions about what's important in life. Do I like this job? Am I going to stick at it? Is this my dream job? How much priority does my work get in my life? Sometimes it's death. Sometimes it's when someone dies. And we consider life and we ask ourselves what's really valuable to us. And another one, though, is money. Okay? Because we use money to determine what's valuable to us. Right? Some people will pay more than a penny for a penny. Did you know that? Some people will pay more than a penny for a penny. Why? Because it's rare. Because to them, that penny may be 100 years old. Maybe it was minted at a particular place. And they'll say, I want that. Well, other people want it. And in order to get it, you have to pay more than the other person. And so that penny that has a face value on it suddenly becomes worth hundreds of dollars. And so money helps us determine what's really important in our lives. And so that's our topic today. And there are several ways to read the Proverbs about money. And the first is the obvious level, is that if you want advice on managing your finances, do you ask someone that's broke or someone that's rich?
Yeah. Right?
Right? There's a popular book out there that's called The Millionaire Next Door. And the idea is that they're living in plain sight, but they live in such a way that they've been able to accumulate wealth. Now, the guy on the other side also wrote a book. Yeah. It was called The I'm Dirt Poor Guy Next Door. And no one bought it because we don't value what he has to say. And so when we come to the book of Proverbs, we see these Proverbs written by, if they're written by Solomon, they're written by one of the richest men ever.
Right.
Solomon, what do you have to say about money? What can we learn about that? And so there is good advice as we go through the book of Proverbs. And I think we almost sort of treat it as a supernatural financial counselor. For instance, Proverbs 22 and verse 7 says this, "The rich rule over the poor, and the borrower is slave to the lender." And so we go, well, that's, in a sense, it's common sense, isn't it? But that hasn't stopped any of us borrowing money when we needed it. And so we need to be reminded of this, and we can take this advice and we can say, on a very practical level, if you want to get ahead in life, if you want don't want to be a slave to someone else, then limit how much you borrow. And then you'll be in a better place in life. The video we watched just watched described wisdom as something very practical. You know, perhaps it's the word can be applied to the way we use wisdom, but also to as it says, to an artisan, to somebody building a wall, and they build that wall wisely. When they build it well, they're putting their knowledge into practice to be a great artisan. And so that's the kind of advice that we find here. But I think it's important that we don't just leave it at that level. We could go through the book of Proverbs and leave it at this level, as looking for how do I manage my money well. But a second way of reading Proverbs on money is to look at the role that this whole cause and effect plays throughout the book of Proverbs, that view of the world. For instance, consider these Proverbs in chapter 28. "Those who work their land will have abundant food, but those who chase fantasies will have their fill of poverty. A reliable person will not escape blessings, but one who wants to get rich quick will not escape trouble." And so you see the cause and effect here, right? That we don't get rich by accident. And the proverb writer, the sages, would have us believe that we also don't lose our money by accident. That more often than not, there's a reason we lose our money. Those who work hard are going to have enough food.
Yes, we are.
And those who chase fantasies, chase emptiness, chase get-rich-quick schemes, the same as it says down the bottom there, will have their fill of poverty. And so we see that the goal of these verses, though, is not to talk about money. The goal of the first proverb there is to encourage diligence, to encourage hard work. Go out, work your land, work hard. And if you do that, then there's this promise, there's this carrot that's dangled out there, and that carrot that's dangled out there is food. Carrot. But if you're not attracted by that, if you try and find shortcuts, then you miss out. So even though it talks about money, to just look at it as, how do I get rich, isn't the point. The Proverbs writer is saying, be diligent, be a hard worker, and you'll be rewarded for that. Same in the second one, be reliable, be faithful. What's your character? And if you do those things, then you won't be able to outrun the blessings that come to you. And so we see this cause and effect through there. So it is kind of about money, but it's not about money. And if we just read it as though I'm looking for financial advice, then we're going to miss the point. Now many people, including the video that we watched, they sort of summarized the book of Proverbs as this cause and effect. And although it's there a lot, that's not the sum total of the wisdom that is given. Proverbs is not that simplistic, at least not all the way through. Because the Proverbs on money have an even deeper purpose. Proverbs recognizes that money is a means to an end. The end of Proverbs is not wealth accumulation. It's the development of character. And so when we come to the book, we're not saying, even though we're talking about the good life, as the video described it, or a beautiful life, it's really not just about a good life. It is about wisdom put into practice, making good decisions that lead to a good life. But those good decisions are going to come from a good person, from a character that has been molded by God. And so the goal of wisdom is the development of character. So we see this here, both that this is not just a simplistic book, because it says, better the poor whose walk is blameless than the rich whose ways are perverse. Proverbs acknowledges that sometimes righteous, blameless people end up in poverty. Likewise, there are wicked, deceitful people who accumulate wealth. So there's no cause and effect to explain this particular proverb. This goes against the grain, but yet we know that it's a reality. And when we look at this, we see that it's the goal is integrity. Okay? It's better, it says, to be poor than to be rich. If your character is blameless or righteous rather than deceitful. And so we see where the priorities of the writers are. There's another proverb. We're going to be hanging out in Proverbs 28 most of the day. But whoever increases wealth by taking interest or profit from the poor amasses it for another who will be kind to the poor. And so this has this same idea that you know, when we accumulate, the way that we treat the poor is important. Our attitude towards wealth is important, but also takes this long-range cause and effect perspective, that ultimately what's accumulated will be given to another. And so I have this very simple outline. That is, we're in the book of Proverbs, we're in chapter 28, and we're just going to look through verses 20 through 28 at those verses that discuss money. And there's a little cluster of them, and we're going to see what they teach us, not about money, but about character. Okay, so we've already covered, I think, some of those verses. If you have your Bible there, in verse 25 of Proverbs 28, we see here that this verse seems to encourage the same kind of cause and effect thinking that we've seen to this point. But it features a couple of distinctive points. First is that the sages specifically warn against greed. Okay? So they name an enemy. I think that's always helpful. You ever watch one of those TV shows where there's some bad guy out there doing something, but the TV show or the movie takes you along through, if it's television, through a few weeks before you find out who is that bad guy? And then they put a face, they put a name on that person. And sometimes we go through life and we have this empty feeling in us where we're chasing the wind, we're not sure what our purpose is, and then someone can name an enemy, can name a sin, can name what that void is, and once it's named, we can begin to address it. We can begin to remedy it. And so here we see greed named as an opponent of the righteous person. And the second thing that we notice here is not just that greed has a consequence, has a negative consequence, but this negative consequence is social. Okay? Greed is not something where we say, this is my money, right? And that, and that, and that, and that. It's all mine. But when we do that, when we take that attitude, when we accumulate more for ourselves, that necessarily means that we're taking from someone else. And when we take from someone else, it causes conflict. It breaks down relationships. Greed is not something that we can, an attitude, a behavior that we can dismiss as being a me thing. It overflows into the lives of people around us. It overflows into relationships. It overflows into our community. It overflows into our church. Greed destroys relationships. And the third thing that we see here is that greed is contrasted with trusting God. Where does this obsession with materialism come from? What motivates greed? We might just think of it as this desire, this longing to have more, this self-centeredness. But the sages don't view it that way. They say that greed is a competitor, is a competitor with Yahweh for our trust. Are we going to trust the things that we accumulate to care for us, to protect us? Or are we going to trust God? Because it's those who will trust God for protection who will prosper. Now, they may prosper financially, they may prosper materially, because God blesses people in those ways at times. But certainly they prosper in life. In general, they may prosper in their relationships while the greedy person burns their bridges. Next, we come to verse 24. And here we've provided with an example of the destructive nature of greed. This proverb is essentially the basis for the parable of the lost son in Luke 15. The New Living Translation that I'm going to put up there now makes this even clearer. Anyone who steals from his father and mother and says, what's wrong with that, is no better than a murderer. Okay? I think the is partner to one who destroys, that's a little ambiguous there. And so I like this, is no better than a murderer. In Jesus' story, the son comes to the father and he demands his inheritance before his father is dead. He essentially says, I value your money more than I value you, and I wish you were already dead. I can't wait for you to die. Although I have no claim to this money at this moment, I demand that you give it to me now. And what's remarkable is that the father gives it to him. And what's even more remarkable is that the father's love and grace is able to overlook the offensive attitude and behavior of his son. And what's revolutionary about Jesus' parable, about Jesus' description of God, is that if you studied the book of Proverbs, you know how that story ends. Because we have it here. Anyone who steals from his father and mother and says, well, what's wrong with that? I'm going to get it one day. I might as well get it now. It says it's no better than a murderer. And we know the consequence for a murderer is that the murderer loses his own life. We know the destruction this attitude would have in the family. We know how siblings would look towards that one that says, I wish you were dead. We understand the conflict and the turmoil that takes place in this parable. We look at it and we go, that is awful. And so the people listening to Jesus said the same thing. And Jesus completely revolutionizes the story and says, but the Father forgave. The Father demonstrated grace and mercy to that son. He flipped the script, but it doesn't usually turn out that way, does it? And so greed destroys those around it. Verse 22 introduces us to a new character. The character is Scrooge. If you want to picture Scrooge McDuck in his money bin, then go for it. If you want to picture Scrooge from the Christmas story, then go for that. But Scrooge doesn't want to spend any money. His focus is all on wealth accumulation. And he knows that anything he spends works against that goal. And here the sages give some counterintuitive advice, and you may not agree with it. It says, poverty awaits stingy people. Because I think there's a temptation for us to respect and honor frugality and people who are careful with their money. And so the line between what's good frugality and what's bad stinginess may just be in the eye of the beholder. But notice also about this person, not just that they're stingy, which is a word that has negative connotations to it, but they're also eager to get rich. They hurry, we're told in some other translations, after riches. The stingy person is only stingy towards other people, is what we learn from this. Okay? They're stingy in their relationships to other people. Because the person in this proverb is quite happy to throw his money into a penny stock that promises a quick turnaround. Or she'll jump into flipping houses because she saw a show on TV and is convinced that she can make big bucks quickly. And the crazy thing is, this stingy person, when they sit down with their friends, is going to talk about responsibility and stewardship and explain to others why they won't share their wealth. And in fact, they may even point to people that don't have the resources they do and label them irresponsible and label them, you know, spendthrifts and just the money's in, easy come, easy go for those other people, as though they're the person who is in the right. They can't afford, though, to tip the waiter. But if the waiter knew a tech startup that Warren Buffett had invested in and it's going to be huge, then suddenly the funds are available. And the sages tell us that poverty then is just around the corner. And we find the contrast to Scrooge just a little later in verse 27. And again, we have this counterintuitive advice. Give money away, and you'll lack nothing. Yeah, and we wrestle with that, don't we? Don't, are you already thinking of your excuses? Are you already thinking of reasons that that doesn't work? Are you already saying, well, you can't take that to an extreme? Are you already trying to qualify it? And say, oh, well, that's good if you have Scrooge McDuck's money bin and you can give the east side to someone else and then you still have the west side for yourself. Right? And so you give to the poor and you have what you need. And I think that's typically the way that we handle these kind of proverbs. Ignore opportunities to give money away and you're going to experience curse after curse. Typically, when we see the word poor, we think of people on busy corners with a sign asking for money. Well, we see children in developing countries seeking monthly sponsorship. And the amount that we know that it would take to meet their immediate needs is relatively low. And yet we, I think in some instances, quite justifiably find reasons not to give there. But while this verse speaks to both of those situations, that there are people in our community, people around the globe, living in poverty, and we do have opportunities to make a difference in their lives, we also have the capacity to be generous anytime we have something that another person doesn't have. Think about that. For instance, in the workplace, we can be generous with our compliments, generous with the recognition that we give to others. It doesn't cost us anything except taking the time to consider other people around us. We can also be generous with our resources, with our time, with our advice. Lots of ways of being generous, not just giving money immediately to those that are obviously more desperate straits than we are. So that kind of wraps up the verses in this section that deal discuss money. And you could go through the book of Proverbs and you'll see lots of these verses. And I encourage you to do it. I encourage you this week. Just pick a chapter. Look through and look what it says about money. Somewhere between chapter 10 and chapter 29. And see what it has to say about money. And put yourself through that examination. Because what does your attitude towards money say about your character? I think this is an important question. Would you know if you were greedy? Would you know if you were greedy? Let me just follow it up with a couple more. Do you find yourself fighting with others over financial issues? Do you have a hard time giving to God? Do you feel like you've worked for your money and it belongs to you? I think they all sort of fall under that heading. Would I know if I was greedy? Another question I have for self-examination. Do you value people more than your lifestyle? Or do your possessions possess you? You see, this is the question that we get through there, through those proverbs, is how important are other people? Do you value other people more than your possessions? Isn't that what the parable of the lost son is about? That the father says, I value you more than the half of my inheritance that I gave you. I would rather lose that. I'd rather liquidate my assets and get rid of it and waste it, see it wasted at a casino, than lose my relationship with my child. And then we ask ourselves, what are the relationships that we're willing to let go over money? We have some of those. I had somebody I don't know very well. They asked me for $50 this last week. I'm not sure I'm going to see that $50 again. I'm not sure if I want to see that person again. I already don't know them very well. I don't think I want to get to know them better, right? And so Proverbs comes to me and Proverbs says, is that person more important than that $50? Yeah, that's a little hard to answer. Because I don't like them very much now. They may only be worth $49 in my eyes, and you know, we're done. And so I think it's a flippant kind of question in a sense, but it's one that we have to think about, and I don't know if we know the answer to it. These are hard questions. And so think, who do you give money to? In these proverbs, the sages describe people who put money first and relationships second. Is that you
that they're talking about? And then the third sort of reflection I have for you, in your mind, is financial responsibility a greater virtue than generosity? Is financial responsibility a greater virtue than generosity?
Now, this is a tough one to answer also because they are both virtues, right? Does anyone think that financial irresponsibility is a good thing?
No. We have a financial counseling ministry that will be available out the back door if that's the case. See them afterwards.
Financial responsibility is a good thing. And we have that ministry because we want to teach people to manage their finances in a wise way. But is it a higher virtue than generosity? Tough, isn't it? Because you know generosity is a good thing. Proverbs tells us that. But how good is it? Depends how much money I have in my wallet at the moment. When I have $10, I can afford to be just as generous as, you know, because I got more in the bank, you know, but I got $10 in my wallet. I can give everything I have in my wallet. But the more I have in my wallet, the less highly I value generosity.
Too often, we see in our society that low-income families outgive those who are financially stable. The more money we have, too often, the harder it is to give away. If woman wisdom is an embodiment of God, then it's no surprise to see God demonstrate these attitudes in his relationship with us. 1 Timothy chapter 2, verses 3 through 6. This is good and pleases God our Savior, who wants all people to be saved and to come to a knowledge of the truth, for there is one God and one mediator between God and mankind, the man Christ Jesus, who gave himself as a ransom for all people. There's a couple of principles up there that we've talked about that I'm not going to talk about anymore except to point them out. First is that God values people and he wants us all to be saved. Okay? God values people more than wealth. He values people so much that he's willing to give up his most precious possession. Third, God generously gives his son as a ransom, buying us back from sin and darkness. That's a giving, that's a generosity there in the way that we view the cross, is that we know, we see, whether it be in real life or in movies, that there are some people that demand ransom, you know, for Americans that are caught overseas, American soldiers or just American tourists, and we go, the government won't pay that much. It's $20 million. No, that person's not worth that much. And Jesus and God come together and they say, whatever the price of the ransom is, we will pay it because the people are worth that much. And the fourth thing isn't up there, but I'm so glad that God's not stingy. I'm so glad that God's not frugal. I'm so glad that God is almost reckless with the things he holds precious in order to obtain the people he regards as more precious. So I want to encourage you today, if you don't feel precious, if you don't feel like you have value, then I want to let you know that you. And it's not just me saying that, it's that Jesus lived this out, that he came to earth, that he died for us, that he defeated death and rose to new life because he loves us. And as the father in the parable runs down the road towards the son that had hurt him, God runs down the road towards us. Arms wide open, saying, whatever you've done, I want you back. I want that relationship. And so there are things in our lives that keep us, though, from approaching God. And sometimes those things are money. Sometimes those things are possessions. Sometimes those things are hobbies or habits. And there are things that say, no, I'm not ready to go home yet. And if that's you, if you say, I'm not ready to commit, I want you to encourage you today to think about the value of what it is that's keeping you from following Jesus and the value of all that Jesus has to offer you. God's not stingy. Thank you. If we can share His grace or His love with you today, if we can help you move closer to Him and take steps towards salvation, to take steps towards God, then please come and talk with me. You can come during this song. Just sit here and let me know what's going on. If there's other needs that you have, other prayers you'd like us to offer for you, then please feel free to share that as well. But if not now, then later today, talk to me, talk to someone else. Let us encourage you in your walk with God. Let's stand and sing together.